It is a romantic comedy filled with love and tension between the President of the United States, who is a widower, and a courageous lobbyist who challenges the President's legislation and his motives. The 1995 movie, The American President, has a memorable and poignant scene where the President speaks at a press conference about his losses and his inadequate legislation on crime prevention. He says, "I've loved two women in my life. I lost one to cancer, and I lost the other because I was so busy keeping my job, I forgot to do my job. Well, that ends right now. Tomorrow morning, the White House is sending a bill to Congress for its consideration. It's White House Resolution 455, an energy bill requiring a 20% reduction of the emission of fossil fuels over the next 10 years. It is by far the most aggressive stride ever taken in the fight to reverse the effects of global warming. The other piece of legislation is the crime bill. As of today, it no longer exists. I'm throwing it out. I'm throwing it out and writing a law that makes sense. You cannot address crime prevention without getting rid of assault weapons and handguns. I consider them a threat to national security. And I will go door to door if I have to, but I'm gonna convince Americans that I'm right, and I'm gonna get the guns." It's time to get the guns. In fact, it's way past time. And it's time to have legislation that makes sense. There is simply no place for assault weapons among citizens in this country. I would also go so far as to say, though they are legal in some places, that tanks, yes, tanks that can actually fire, might be a bit, shall we say, superfluous. The NRA says blatantly, while it has to be absolutely terrifying to citizen-controlled cultists, and I guess that's an epithet that would be attributed to me, we have a right to bear arms, and that indeed include tanks. My point, of course, is that there has to be a line drawn in order to make children and black people and gays and lesbians and Unitarian Universalists in Tennessee and senators in Arizona and you and me safe. The means by which people remain safe cannot be through the use of guns. According to the Brady Campaign to Prevent Gun Violence, an average of 289 people are shot by guns every single day in this country. 289. 86 of whom die, some of whom are children. This ultimately isn't about a fight with the NRA. It's about the soul of this country. Americans laud our country as the greatest in the world, and yet we do little to change our culture of violence. Now, I happen to see greatness in terms of compassion, caring, happiness, contentment, and peace. So I want to know what is in your heart. I'm not so concerned about what your politics are. I want to know that in meeting your own needs, you are also meeting the same needs in others, which is another way of saying the golden rule. I want to know that our children's well-being and future are sacrosanct, that we will do everything we can to create a loving and safe environment for all our kids, regardless of their race or nationality. But that is not the case. And so the gun issue can no longer be seen simply as a political hot potato. Rather, it must be seen as a public health issue. It amazed me at how forcefully we dealt with the Ebola virus when in 2014 it was discovered that an individual in the United States had contracted the disease in West Africa. President Obama had response teams created to travel to hospitals that had diagnosed a patient with the Ebola infection. He appointed a coordinator to oversee the entire process. In addition, the United States sent troops to West Africa to establish treatment centers to help those infected with Ebola. Although the data is not conclusive, it is estimated that in 2014, there were around 10,000 people worldwide affected by the Ebola virus, about half of whom have died. Most of the others have recovered. And in the United States, 11 people were treated for the infection in the U.S., with 2 people dying from the virus and 9 recovering. I think it is safe to say that within the United States, the Ebola outbreak was dealt with aggressively and effectively, primarily because it was seen as a national public health issue. So when, on average, 10 times the number of people in the U.S. are shot by guns in a year compared to the number of Ebola cases throughout the entire world, why is this not a public health issue? Why is this not a national security issue as well? Why are we not dealing with it aggressively and effectively? When are we going to go door to door and get the guns? Or to put it another way, how do we deal with the disease of physical violence when guns are a major means of implementing that violence? For those of us who despair about any hope of having sensible gun control laws, I would like to tell the story of Australia, which, by the way, was once a British penal colony. In fact, 20% of modern Australians are descended from convicted prisoners who were transported from England in the 18th and 19th centuries. Interestingly, President Obama made reference to this story in an interview on gun control in June. The Prime Minister of Australia from 1996 to 2007 was John Howard, who was a close ally to former President George W. Bush. Howard was a conservative who supported the Iraq War and took a hard line against union organizing and increased immigration. But in April of 1996, at a popular tourist site, the historic Port Arthur prison colony in southeast Tasmania, Australia, Martin Bryant went on a killing spree, killing 35 people and wounding 23. The Port Arthur massacre remains one of the deadliest shootings worldwide committed by a single person. Although John Howard's political career as prime minister was at stake, he went after the guns. He managed to institute laws countrywide that banned semi-automatic and automatic rifles and shotguns. It also instituted a mandatory buyback program for newly banned weapons. Australia has not witnessed a mass shooting since. The Australian law's effectiveness can also be seen by the fact that the gun-related homicides have decreased by close to 60%, and gun-related suicides have decreased by 65%. After the Aurora, Colorado shooting spree at a movie theater in 2012, which probably we all recall, which killed 12 people and injured 70 others, Howard called on the United States to follow Australia's lead. He said, "Australia is a safer country as a result of what was done in 1996. It will be the continuing responsibility of current and future federal and state governments to ensure the effectiveness of those anti-gun laws that is never weakened. The U.S. is a country for which I have much affection. There are many American traits which we Australians could well emulate to our great benefit. But when it comes to guns, we have been right to take a radically different path." That radically different path is serious gun control laws nationwide, not in opposition to any group or political party, but because there is an epidemic in this country that is a public health issue. If there is a disease, you use every means possible in order to eradicate it. Well, maybe not entirely. I personally don't think the use of guns in order to stop the use of guns makes sense. I don't think the use of violence in order to stop violence makes sense. Both the ends and the means need to be ethical. And so our police forces must also become models for the citizens they are purportedly protecting as well. There is no room whatsoever among our police for prejudice and hatred. There is absolutely no justification for the killing of our own people by our own people. There are alternatives. There are always alternatives. And for such an historically creative and innovative country as ours, we can do better. We have to do better. But there needs to be a commitment to the following. One, the gun situation in our country is essentially an epidemic that must be viewed as a public health issue. Most U.S. physicians, in fact, are seeking precisely for this kind of understanding. Dr. Taryn Takeman notes that it does not matter whether we believe that guns kill people or that people kill people with guns. The result is the same, a public health crisis. It is unfortunate that the NRA, the National Rifle Association, almost derailed the confirmation of Dr. Vivek Murthy, President Barack Obama's pick for Surgeon General over a year ago, after he criticized lawmakers for cowering to special interests and not treating gun violence as a public health issue. It is unfortunate because we all have a vested interest in the well-being of every person. Two, because of the inherent worth and dignity of every human being, all people need to be respected. Now, I know, too, that this is a lofty ideal. I know it is hard not to make assumptions or judgments about people. I'm constantly trying to retrain myself to look at people with compassion and not to judge them. It is a lifelong effort, one in which I all too often fall short. And our culture does not help. And because it has been told, we have been told in a variety of ways not to trust other people, because, and always to question people's motives, usually negatively, and particularly not to trust strangers. But I think that as we personally work through our first principle, which is a principle used by many international peace groups, we need to be more open and vulnerable. To truly accept people's worth and dignity requires vulnerability on our part. Three. There needs to be a larger, more substantive vision than that which is often discussed on a daily basis with regard to gun control. And that is, the way through the morass of conflict, power, and violence is through truth-telling, compassion, and unconditional love. While these may seem to be, again, very lofty, unrealistic ideals, these are actually the theological underpinnings of all the major religions worldwide. In our own Judeo-Christian background, for example, the prophetic movement of ancient Israel, of which Jesus was a part, talked about chesed, often translated as love, loving kindness, mercy, or goodness. But the depth of its meaning is established in the unbreakable covenant that is made between the people of ancient Israel and their God, Yahweh. It is always chesed that rules the day, not the king. In a more contemporary context, Martin Luther King Jr. exclaimed during the Civil Rights Movement, "I refuse to accept the view that mankind is so tragically bound to the starless midnight of racism and war that the bright daybreak of peace and brotherhood can never become a reality. I believe that unarmed truth and unconditional love will have the final word." While I think it is imperative that we advocate for these three points or principles in any serious discussion about gun violence in America, I'm also aware that guns is big business. In 2012, it was estimated that the guns and ammunition industry had sales of well over $11 billion. 47%, almost 50% of Americans claim they have guns. But then the United States itself is one of the two biggest exporters of weapons in the world. In 2013, the U.S. had sold weapons to 75 countries, amounting to $27 billion. David Corton, a popular author and speaker at General Assembly, talked about the need to transform our economy so that we are more aligned with our spiritual self. He calls for what he terms the great turning from empire to earth community. The guns, weapons, and arms industries are part of an empire economy which no longer can be sustainable. It is time for a transformation. If black lives really matter, if the lives of the Sandy Hook children really matter, if justice really matters, then our prophetic calling as a church can be no less than to help both heal and to transform the world. May it be so, and blessed be.